Well, this morning we're continuing our study on the topic of prayer. And we've seen over the last couple weeks that prayer is one of those things that is both simple and profound. It's one of those things, it's both simple and profound. So it's simple. Like if you were to ask, like I said a couple weeks ago, if you ask my 2-year-old son, Soren, what is prayer? He will respond. He will say, talk, and then he'll stop for the sake of anticipation. And then he completes the thought. He goes, talk to God. And there he is. I mean, he's a little budding theologian. He's exactly right. Prayer is talking to God in response to God's speech. It's simple. But prayer is also incredibly profound. It's so profound that, did you know, it's the only thing that Jesus' disciples ever ask Jesus to teach them in the Gospels? I find that incredible. They've seen Jesus heal the blind, raise a man from the dead, and calm a storm that was about to kill them with a word like that. And yet, the one thing they wanted Jesus to teach them was how to pray. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I'm the disciples, I'm like, I'll go with the storm thing. Can you teach me how to do that? Like, that would be incredible. But not Jesus' disciples. They were so enthralled by his intimacy with God the Father in prayer that they were like, would you teach us that more than anything else? That's what we want to learn. And in response to their request, Jesus taught them what we call the Lord's Prayer or the Our Father. It's a model for how to pray. And it can be summarized with the acronym ACTS: adoration, confession, thanksgiving, and supplication. The Lord's Prayer is essentially a model. The order's not all that important, and all the categories tend to bleed into one another a little bit. But the Lord's Prayer is a model of how we can respond to God out of an overflow of what he's spoken to us in the Bible. And so this morning, we're going to take a closer look at thanksgiving as one part of the anatomy of prayer. We're going to look at thanksgiving. Now, thanksgiving is similar to a category we looked at 2 weeks ago, which is adoration. Remember, adoration, we said, is praising God for who he is and what he's revealed about himself in the Bible. Now, thanksgiving is similar, but it's a little bit different. At its core, thanksgiving is praising God for what he's done. So adoration, praising God for who he is. Thanksgiving, praising God for what he's done. That's the definition. But what I want us to do this morning is take a little deeper look at Psalm 100. Because Psalm 100 takes us beyond the definition of thanksgiving to really the big idea of thanksgiving throughout the Bible. It's sort of a microcosm of what the whole Bible has to say about thanksgiving. And so there are a few elements I want us to piece together, and then we'll establish what the big idea is about thanksgiving. So take a look at Psalm 100 for me. The first key element when it comes to biblical thanksgiving is that it's shot through. Biblical thanksgiving is shot through with happy emotion. Okay, biblical thanksgiving is not sort of emotionally detached like a teenager begrudgingly writing a thank you card after birth. It's like, yes, one more sweater. Thank you, Aunt Betty. I absolutely love it. You know, no, it's not detached and emotionless. No, biblical thanksgiving is actually shot through with happy emotions. Take a look at Psalm 100, verses 1 and 2. It says, make a joyful noise to the Lord. Serve the Lord with gladness. One of the most amazing things about the Bible is it actually commands your emotions. That's the first element. But there's more to it. If you look further at verse 4, you see that the second element of thanksgiving is that biblical thanksgiving is not primarily an inward state. It's an outward expression. Biblical thanksgiving is not primarily an inward state. It's primarily an outward expression with the lips. So verse 4 says, enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. These are verbal actions. But probably the most important element, if we're going to figure out the big idea behind prayers of thanksgiving, is found in verse 5. It says, it gives us the ground, the reason why we should offer thanksgiving. It says, for the Lord is good, his steadfast love endures forever. Biblical thanksgiving, the most important element of it is that it has a definite object. biblical thanksgiving is not at all the same thing as sort of like an attitude of gratitude. Biblical thanksgiving is not sort of like general optimism and good vibes. Now, biblical thanksgiving is far more positive than that. It's this joyful expression to the God who is worthy of it. It's not just, hey, I'm generally thankful all the time with no object. One of the most joyless things in life is being thankful without someone to thank. And biblical thanksgiving at its heart has God as its object. So you piece all that together and you begin to get the big idea of thanksgiving in Psalm 100 and really in the Bible in general. And I believe it's this. I believe what Psalm 100 calls us to when it comes to prayers of thanksgiving is this: express joyful gratitude to the one who is worthy. That's what Psalm 100 calls us to. Express joyful gratitude to the one who is worthy. Now, that of course raises a question. Why? Why should we embrace a lifestyle of expressing joyful gratitude to God when complaining is so much more natural to us? Why should we embrace this lifestyle of expressing joyful gratitude when it's so much more normal, so much more acceptable, and really so much more natural to just express complaining? Like, tomorrow morning is Monday. What will you and all your classmates or, you know, coworkers do very first thing in order to connect with one another emotionally? You're going to complain about the fact that it's Monday morning. This is totally natural. This is the way that most of us just normally function. So why? Why should we embrace the discipline and delight of actually expressing joyful gratitude to the one who is worthy rather than complaining? I think Psalm 100 gives us two reasons. One, it's because it's commanded. Joyful gratitude is commanded. And secondly, it's supported. It's commanded and supported. We'll get into each of them, but let's start with the first reason why we should embrace thanksgiving as a central piece of our prayer life and express joyful gratitude to God. The first reason is because we're commanded to do it. Take a look at verse 4. Notice the way these verbs are being used. They're not suggestions. Enter his gates with thanksgiving. Give thanks to him. Bless his name. Those are all commands. Verse 1 even commands our emotions. Make a joyful noise to the Lord. The first and foremost reason why we should express joyful gratitude to the one who is worthy is because you and I are actually commanded to do it. Now, I don't know about you, but I have a very averse relationship with being commanded to express thanksgiving. I think this goes back a little bit into my childhood. My parents both, I grew up in Los Angeles, my parents both worked very busy, high-powered careers, and my mom would commute an hour each way to said career, so she was an incredibly busy woman. And to save time, my mom was a genius, and she would bake every Sunday night of my childhood, a massive pan of boneless, skinless, tasteless, completely organic chicken breast before it was cool to be organic. This was my mother. This is what she'd do. And then every night of the week, she would pair it with a raw vegetable, also with absolutely nothing added to it. And any complaining from my siblings or myself, by the way, moms and dads, this is a foolproof plan for your children to dislike you, but to also be fed. Okay, so my brother, my sister, myself, we would constantly feel this temptation to complain, but you stopped complaining pretty early on because any hint of complaining was met first with a swift reminder about global poverty, and then secondly with a very quick command to be thankful because not everyone has this absolutely disgusting meal. And so I developed a very averse feeling toward being commanded to express thanks. I imagine some of you share this. Like, someone tells you you have to be thankful, and immediately it just turns it around. Like, no, That's it. I was actually considering being thankful. But then you commanded it. And now I must complain. I must press forward with discontentment and discouragement. You commanded me the opposite. God knows this about us. Why? Why does he command us to express joyful gratitude? Well, I think there are a couple reasons. I think the first one is because it's actually incredibly dangerous to not embrace the regular practice of expressing joyful gratitude to God. It's actually incredibly dangerous. Now, what do I mean by that? In his brilliant book, his Reflections on the Psalms, C.S. Lewis says that those who do not regularly and continually express joyful gratitude to God will become incredibly fake people. I remember I read that, incredibly fake. What do you mean? I mean, let's be honest, we're a church primarily full of, 20 and 30-year-olds, except, of course, for Gordon. He's and a few others of you that I have pleaded with God to bring. Thank you for being here. Please bring your friends. We have got to get older. It's like, you look at this and you go, being fake is about the worst thing possible if you're 25, right? Fake. And C.S. Lewis says, if you don't regularly express joyful gratitude to God, you are as fake as they come. And I read that and I go, why? And he says, because if you don't regularly express joyful gratitude to God, you live in a fantasy world. You don't live in the real world because in the real world, everything you have and love is an undeserved gift from the sovereign God. So when we don't express joyful gratitude, we actually live in a discontent, discouraged fantasy world that doesn't exist. And we become profoundly fake people. It's very dangerous. Tim Keller picks up on this theme of being fake when you don't express joyful gratitude, and he says this. He says, a lack of praise of God is a lack of reality, and praising him helps us enter the real world and enjoy him more fully. He goes on to talk about the dangers of not expressing joyful gratitude to God, and he says, in the end, we not only rob God, if we don't express joyful gratitude, we not only rob God of the glory due to him, but the assumption that we are keeping our lives going robs us of the joy and relief that constant gratitude to an all-powerful God brings. So we're commanded to express joyful gratitude to God because to not do it's incredibly dangerous for us. We become fake people. We don't live in the real world, where every good and perfect gift comes down to us from a good and perfect God. But on the flip side, it's not only that we're commanded because it's so dangerous to not, but we're commanded because our happiness actually depends on it. Think about it. We experience the height of happiness not from seeing something beautiful, but from speaking about it. You ever notice this? That our joy in a thing is actually consummated and completed when we talk about it, when we express it, when we praise it. So for example, that's why I love to hike. And that's why if you go hiking with someone, they can never shut their mouths. Because we don't enjoy seeing mountain peaks quite the same unless we tell the person next to us, did you see that? Do you see how beautiful that actually completes the experience when you're expressing it? It's the same reason why C.S. Lewis says lovers can't stop complimenting one another, because that's the completion of the joy in the other. It's the same reason why when you watch like an exhilarating playoff game, which, in like a month maybe will happen in the NBA, you experience this like, I have got to talk to everyone about this. Everyone has to know what I saw Steph Curry do, because you're not that excited about what he did. You're not as excited about what he did as you will be when you talk about it. And in the same way, we're commanded to give thanks, express joyful gratitude to God, because God knows that's how our joy in him is completed and consummated. See, we're commanded to express joyful gratitude to God regularly and fervently, because if we do, it pulls us out of the fantasy world of discontentment and into the joyful world where there is an all-powerful God who is the source of every good and perfect thing that we experience. You know, a couple weeks ago, I had mentioned to you that I struggled deeply with the sin of discontentment. For me, discontentment can be as natural as breathing. And for many of you in this room, that it's that way for you as well. You know, like 99% of your life is going well, and you're fixated on the 1%. And I started to see in preparing this sermon that I really hadn't seen what the core source of that is. C.S. Lewis has this quote that really, like, punched me in the throat. He says, "The humblest and at the same time most balanced and capacious minds praised or offer thanksgiving to God most." While, and yes, don't cringe if this describes you, it describes me a little bit too. While the cranks, misfits, and malcontents praised least. What C.S. Lewis is pointing out is that those who express joyful gratitude the least experience discontentment the most. You ever notice that? That in your most discontent moments, they are the least shot through with the expression of joyful gratitude to God? You ever notice that it's really hard to hold together a discouraged, discontent attitude while at the same time expressing gratitude to God, the one who is worthy? That just hit me right in the heart, because the source of my lack of contentment is really my lack of expressing gratitude to the one who is worthy. And so that's why he commands it. God essentially, if I could boil it down, commands us to express joyful gratitude to him. Because when we do, our joy and his glory come together. And as John Piper says, God is then most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. That's why it's commanded, for our good and his glory. But there's more to the passage. It's not just that we are commanded to give thanks. Thanksgiving is also supported. The psalmist doesn't leave thanksgiving as something only commanded, but something supported. He commands us to express gratitude and then comes and supports the command by telling us why God is the one who is worthy of all joyful gratitude. And you see this primarily in verse 3. He's supporting. He said, I want you to sing joyful, make melody to the Lord. I want you to sing his praise. And you go, why? Well, I've already told you to. That's one reason why. But here's another. In verse 3, it says, know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who made us. And I think literally in the Hebrew, the next phrase should be translated, and not we ourselves. Notice that. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who made us. And if you're reading the ESV, you'll see a footnote. And not we ourselves. You know why we should express joyful gratitude to God? You and I are not self-made people. I don't care what your background is like. I don't care who your parents are. You are not self-made, and neither am I. Did you know? I want you to try to pause. I've been trying to get myself to, like, feel this all week, and I haven't quite gotten it yet, but there is not one thing. Look at me. There is not one thing that you have, that you love, that you enjoy, that you have not been given. We did not make ourselves. We don't provide for ourselves. We are not self made. And therefore, we have every, if you have breath, you have every reason to express joyful gratitude to the one who is worthy. What's amazing, though, is that verse 3 doesn't end there. Look there then where he goes. He says, know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who made us, not we ourselves. And then he says, we are his people. That carries the connotation of adoption. He chose us to be his very own. He didn't just make us. He chose us to be his own. And the description of it, he says, we are his people, and that's sort of like the fact that we are the sheep of his pasture. The psalmist is trying to tell us something about the way God relates to us with this word picture, the sheep of his pasture. Now, I don't know about you, but I have very little experience with sheep. So I tend to read things like that. Oh, sheep of his pasture, that's nice, a little beautiful. I like the poetry. You know, that's I'm all about the Psalms. But it kind of just flows over my head because, you know, my experience with agrarian culture is pretty much nil. So what does he mean when he says we are the sheep of his pasture? I did a little bit of research this week into what ancient Near Eastern shepherding was like. Not that interesting, actually. But there were a few things that really stuck out. But I think primarily what the psalmist is trying to tell us when he says we are the sheep of his pasture is he's saying that God relates to us through protection, guidance, and provision. So in the ancient Near East, a shepherd would carry a club with them, typically with nails driven into the butt of it. And they'd carry this club around with them as they were leading their sheep and risk their lives to fight off any predator. He's psalmist saying, that's a bit of what it's like, the way God relates to you. But it's not just protection, it's also guidance. So in the ancient Near East, shepherds would carry like a 5 to 6 foot long staff with a hook on the end because sheep are notoriously dumb. And they will just wander off to their death. And so they just use that thing, pull you right back into line. Interestingly, I learned that in the ancient Near East, shepherds, unlike in the West, shepherds would never drive from the rear. They'd never stand behind and drive them along with the force of their voice. No, instead, they'd either walk alongside next to or in front, leading their sheep. And that's a picture of how God guides us. And of course, the shepherd kept them alive and guided them so that they could get to pastures or streams where they could drink. It's this picture of provision. And the psalmist is saying, that is the one who is worthy. He is like a sheep with his shepherd. And then, of course, in the New Testament, Jesus comes along and calls himself the good shepherd. In John chapter 10, Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd. And we learn that he doesn't just risk his life for the sheep. Jesus, our good shepherd, laid his life down to protect us from the coming wrath of God that we deserve. He lived the righteous life that we've never lived and took the curse of our unrighteousness upon himself on the cross. He's our good shepherd who protects us from something so much worse than death through his death. And then he gives us the promise, if you've read the end of Matthew's gospel, he promises to be with us always. He'll always be there, guiding, providing. He'll never leave or forsake you. There is no pit that you experience so deep that he's not deeper still. This is the picture of the one who is worthy. He is the good shepherd who laid down his life, didn't risk it, laid it down on the cross for you and for me. And as verse 5 then says, we can now trust, because of his life, death, and resurrection on our behalf, that he is good, and that in Christ, God's steadfast love endures forever, and his faithfulness to all generations. Do you know this about Jesus? I ask you because in verse 3 it says, know that the Lord, he is God. Do you know these things about Jesus? Do you know that he is the good shepherd who through his life, death, and resurrection has promised to provide, protect, and guide you forever? You see, if you know these things about Jesus, then you can base your thanksgiving upon what he has done. You know, we often wonder when we read in the New Testament, there's this interesting command all over the place that says, express thanksgiving at all times. And then you research and you look at the original language and you realize that all means all. And you're like, oh my gosh, really? Even this? And then it doesn't exclude anything. You don't have to be a Greek scholar to know this. All means all. He says, give thanks in all situations. How could you possibly do that? It's by knowing that Jesus is your good shepherd and that he never changes. And his steadfast love for you is permanent and personal. And so you're basing your thanksgiving not on something that can change, so you can be thankful always, even in the midst of what you're facing right now. So that's what Psalm 100 tells us. It tells us express joyful gratitude because you have to, but it's not that kind of have to the one who is worthy. Okay. Now, by God's grace, I still have 4 minutes. And I would like to spend these last 4 minutes sort of answering the question, okay, how? How would I actually take this up as a regular practice of mine as a follower of Jesus? And I've got 3 quick ideas for you for how you can make expressing joyful gratitude to God part of your set times of prayer and also part of your regular lifestyle, because we're supposed to pray in chunks and then also pray continually. Okay, so here's the first one. I'm stealing all of these, okay? So the first one is what Tim Keller calls gospel thanksgiving. Gospel thanksgiving. This is something you can practice during sort of your set times of prayer. So we've said one of the most important things you can do if you want to learn to talk to God in response to what he said is to schedule a time and a place to pray. Remember, hardly any of us do anything important without scheduling it. So prayer will not be any different. Please don't wait until you have the magical prayer feelings. Just schedule a time and place and show up. That in and of itself is magic. Okay, so you're there, and we've said choose a book of the Bible to be your guide in prayer. So my favorites to use as a prayer guide are Psalms or Ephesians. And you read and you look at what it says, and you turn God's word around into your words in prayer. So I'm doing this with the Psalms right now and a little bit with Ephesians as well. So gospel thanksgiving looks something like this. It starts with adoration. So you read this psalm, Psalm 100, and you adore the God who is steadfast in his love. So you whatever you see about God, you can ask this question. How can I love and praise God on the basis of what I see? How can I love and praise God on the basis of what I see? That's adoration. Then confession is, how do I fail to realize this in my life? So that could be, okay, I'm praising God because he is the one who is steadfast in his love forever. And then confession, like say I might be like, and my love toward my wife, the fellow staff members at the church, my city group, have failed to live up to that in this very specific way. And I agree with God's judgment about my sin. That's what confession is. But then thanksgiving can take kind of 2 parts from here. So you're reading the passage, you're working along, and thanksgiving is where you can ask these 2 questions. First, how can I thank Jesus as the ultimate revelation of these attributes of God? So what that means is if you're reading Psalm 100 and you see we are his people and the sheep of his pasture, maybe you offer thanksgiving to Jesus. I am one of God's people, not because of anything I've done, but because you are his true son and you sacrificed your life so I could be an adopted son. It says that God is the shepherd. You are the good shepherd. You came, took on flesh. You left every ounce of the praise and comfort of heaven and took on flesh for me. You were humiliated. So you're offering thanksgiving because Jesus is the imprint, the exact attributes of God in human form. But then there's another part of thanksgiving where you are thanking Jesus that he has succeeded where you have failed. So I've failed in my steadfast love commitment to my wife in this particular way. Jesus, thank you that you have never failed me in your steadfast love. And your steadfast love and righteousness is credited to me so that God looks at me and says, "Not this is a..." And so you're just off to the races. You may not be an emotional basket case like me, so it sounds exactly like that, but you make it your own. You make it your own. So that's gospel thanksgiving. A second way that you can make thanksgiving sort of part of your regular practice is what George Mueller and Paul Miller. Paul Miller in his book, A Praying Life, and George Mueller in the book, Answers to Prayer, two of my favorite books on prayer. They talk about something called tracking God's faithfulness. This can take two forms. The first one is, say you're reading the Psalms. You just ask yourself, are you reading any book of the Bible that you're using as your prayer guide? And you just ask yourself, where in this passage do I see signs of God's faithfulness that I can give thanks for? So if you're reading about the plagues, you can just express thankfulness to God that though that's the wrath you deserve, it's not coming to you because of Jesus. If you're in the Sermon on the Mount and you're reading about the new ethic for God's kingdom people, you're expressing thanks that God has given us his law as a lamp and a light to our path. So you're reading and you simply say, where do I trace signs of God's faithfulness that I can express thanks to him for? Now, the other side of this, and we're going to get into this more next week, the other side of tracking God's faithfulness is that we are to be people who pray regularly and specifically for things. I could almost summarize the New Testament's teaching on prayer with the word ask. I mean, you read the Gospels, and Jesus is constantly like, ask, 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 like a child with parents, ask, ask, ask. Well, if you ask specifically and record what you're asking for, I like to use prayer cards. Again, we'll get into this next week. Then, as you're praying, you can look at your prayer cards and track the story of God's faithfulness in your life and express thanks to him for it. You can just express thanks. Like, I made a prayer card before we had Soren. I remember I made this prayer card because Andrea has had health problems. I thought maybe we'll never be able to get pregnant. And I just put this thing on the prayer card. And man, that prayer card, that was amazing. We got pregnant really fast. And I was like, it was a constant sign of God's faithfulness to me. And I can just constantly express thanks. And there are dozens and dozens of these cards as you do this over time. Finally, I want to tell you about my favorite one. It's my favorite way that you can make expressing joyful gratitude to God part of your regular life. And C.S. Lewis calls this something like taking life personally. This is more for expressing gratitude continually rather than just during your prayer times set. But this he writes in Reflections on the Psalms that he developed the instinct of thanksgiving and joyful gratitude to God by disciplining himself that whenever he experienced something that was at all pleasing or happy to him. So it's like he took a sip of tea and it was hot and tasted good. He was a British guy, so no coffee or taste in much food. You know, so he just, okay, if you've been to England, you know. Or like he's just walking and he sees a bird, and it chirps, he likes the sound. Or he's reading a book, and the literature is beautiful. He would discipline himself at every turn, every experience of something like this, to say, God, how good of you to give this to me. Now, that is taking life personally. He calls it tracing the sunbeam back to the sun. See, it comes out of James 1 where it says that every good gift we experience is a gift from God. So why pretend that this gift is somehow separate from the giver and therefore not a gift? It's the most joyless and most fake way to live, because I know that a few of you are thinking, that sounds like the most fake thing ever. Like, you know, I'm out on a hike and I go, oh God, how happy, how joyful, how good of you to have given me that peak. Now, the most fake thing in the world is to not do that. Pretend that's not a gift. To pretend that that mountain or that stream or that, if you're more like of a, you know, smart person, that piece of technology, let's say, I'm not very technological, so I would never say this, but if you're coding, you should just stop and be like, how good of God to make the universe in such an orderly way that this somehow works and fits together. Some of you, you're in the medical field, like, you just, when you look at that human body, can you stop for a moment and just be like, that thumb, like that is truly, how good of you to give me this thumb that I'm not just dropping things constantly. If you were to do this, you would... Here's the reason why we have to actually do this discipline is because you and I have a complaining instinct. It's really strong. Most of us in this room have such an instinct for discontentment that, like I said, it's as almost as natural as breathing. You're just constantly discouraged. And that is natural. In fact, Romans chapter 1 says it is the sin behind every sin. You know, in Romans 1, Paul is talking about the sin that has separated us from God, and he describes it as refusing to give thanks. That's amazing. The sin behind every sin is the refusal to honor God as God and give him thanks. And so we have to learn, we have to relearn through the grace that is in Jesus Christ, the instinct to give thanks instead of expressing complaint, to experience gratitude rather than discontentment. It will not happen naturally. In fact, Jesus had to die to make it possible. That's why I want to close with maybe the most important way to develop a joyful gratitude, a thanksgiving instinct, is by regularly gathering with Jesus' people and taking communion. In a moment, I'm going to stop talking. The team is going to come up to lead us in worship. And anytime during the next three songs, if you're a follower of Jesus, you're welcome to come to the communion tables in front or in the back. You can tear off a piece of bread. That bread is a symbol of Jesus' body broken for you. You can dip it in the cup. It's a picture of his blood shed for you. And as you taste it and you eat it, you're remembering that Jesus had to die for our thanklessness. Jesus has gone to the cross and taken the judgment we deserve for not honoring God as God and giving him thanks. But he has taken the judgment. He's taken the condemnation. And in Christ, we are free and we are thankful. We don't have to live in the prison of discontentment or complaining. We can actually express joyful gratitude because the cross is proof that Jesus is the one who is worthy. So let's come to Jesus in faith for forgiveness and mercy. And let's express now in song joyful gratitude to the one who is worthy.